It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, and a very special one indeed. So glad to have you along with us. We're going to be here for the next 3 hours. That's right. From 3 until 6 p.m. And we're going to be talking about everything from innovation, people who have got companies that are doing incredible things here in our metropolitan Detroit area and around the state. We're also going to be talking about cybersecurity. And we have a Brigadier General from the State National Guard coming in our second hour. Lots of things, including answering your questions here on the Internet Advisor. Stay tuned. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown here, co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker for lo these many years, and delighted to be able to be with you folks for 3 hours here at the end of the summertime, at least in terms of the clock, officially.
That's right. Hey, we're going to spring. We're going to fall back.
That's right. Everybody tonight, can fall back on their pillows. Okay.
There we go. I'm a little trick-or-treated out. We did not have many trick-or-treaters.
It was a rough night last.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of treats left at our
house. Oh, got to get them out. That's the thing. Out of sight, out of mind, you know, out of mouth. I think that's the main thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's Gary Baker. Ed Riddell, good to have you here.
Oh, it's always great to be back. You know, I was on the west side of the state visiting my kids at Grand Valley, and it was practically a whiteout over there yesterday.
I understood that snow, sorry about that four-letter word, folks, is actually falling here in Michigan, Mount Pleasant, where my two granddaughters are at Central Michigan, same thing.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't stick, I mean, except on my deck in the back of the house. But, yeah, I mean, my deck's white, but it wasn't very pleasant driving.
Speaking of white, the white-haired guru of Apple and all things digital is with us as well, Cal Carson.
You know, he just can't tell the difference between a platinum highlight and white. There's a big difference, but it's really wonderful to be back. I got a chance to start my morning very early because we were having an alumni breakfast over at my high school.
Oh, my.
And I smell like bacon.
Well, that's great.
That would perfume, and to some people, that would be perfume.
After cooking about 75 pounds of it, it does to permeate one's soul.
Hey, well, we got some interesting things in this first hour, by the way, guys. We were talking in just a little bit with Vince Schmielewski, who is with VC Web Design, and then Mark Serra's with us from Spread the Glove, which is a really neat new kind of a social media for people to be proud, anywhere you are, to be proud of Michigan. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, you can put your mitten right in that glove.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And then Yum Village. We're going to be talking about some really neat stuff going on around Detroit with a fellow named Godwin, who's going to be in here to talk about that coming up. All that in this hour. And then the second hour is going to be focusing on cybersecurity and Tech Town. So we're going to be talking with a lot of people who are involved in both building new businesses and protecting the ones that we have right now. And let's talk a little bit about some of the things that have come up this week. Have any of you watched the news about the Microsoft ban?
You mean like Xbox ban?
No. This is the ban around your wrist.
Oh, yes.
It is essentially their answer to the Fit, the Fit band.
Oh, yeah, that thing everyone was waiting on. No, I'm sorry. That was the other product.
I will tell you that a guy at work, Chris Allen, he said, "Wow, this is really great." He showed me, and I'm going, "Oh, this is cool. How many steps have you taken?" He goes, 512. He says, "Well, I've had it for an hour and a half."
Now, funny is 512, which is half of 256, which is half of, it's like...
It was computer. As many steps, right?
Yeah. What was remarkable is that you didn't hear about it until after the announcement. There was hardly any PR, unlike, one of their, big other splashes that takes
place. Right, exactly. And contrary to a lot of the companies out nowadays that have big gala events in different places and blow the trumpet for it, there was I didn't see any
previous information on this, but yesterday I was in the Microsoft store in Troy, and they told me that they have been completely sold out.
I'll tell you what, it looks nice.
It is. I got to put one on, and I have to say this: it looks like the fit. It is not the kind of piece of jewelry that the Apple iWatch is going
to
be.
Sure, yeah.
And it's not meant to be that. It's meant to be here's the other thing that's really cool about it. It's compatible with iOS devices, mm-hmm. with Android devices, and with Windows devices. So you don't have to have a special phone in order to have it working. And that is what they're doing more and more. Like, I don't know if you saw, Cal, this week, that Microsoft just released the brand new Outlook for the Mac 2011. It's completely new. As a matter of fact, they recommend that you uninstall the Outlook for the Mac 2011 that's there now. So, I mean, what I'm saying is they're working across platforms when all the other companies seem to be pulling their wagons in and getting real tight with their machinery.
Microsoft is, in that whole software thing, a twist, which is unusual, because everyone else is building their own ecosystems. Microsoft is doing both. They're building an ecosystem.
Yes.
But they're also building and drawing the system. I don't know what the right word for it. But they're building a system that works for everybody.
Open.
Open. Well, no. I don't want to say open. I want to say it's more...
Well, it's cross-platform.
Yes, exactly. Let's go with that. That's a good way to go.
Now,
the interesting part is, I don't know how many others do this, but it takes your pulse as well.
And it's also got a UV sensor. So
oh,
if
that's
you're
right.
It
was
I heard
the
that
UV
well.
Sensor.
Yeah.
That,
if you're outside, it'll tell the UV that's going on. Now, one of the downsides on it,
was kind
of
neat.
It's not waterproof. The fellow who was standing next to me asked the saleswoman, can I take it into the shower? And they said, no, it's not waterproof that way. It may be water resistant in the sense that if you get a little rain on it or something like that, it's not going
to
go.
I don't know. The way I sweat, it would have to be waterproof.
You know, that's true. And if somebody has it, for instance, in the gym, you're exercising vigorously, that can be handled.
I don't
as
think
well.
Lifting the beer is going to get you more straight than high.
I am not that sloppy with drinking a beer. I will not spill a drop.
It costs too much to spill it. Anyway, what's fascinating is they are saying now, and they said at the store, and that apparently online and in the store, in the Microsoft store, they have sold out of the iBand. So it'll be interesting to see. And
that is a splash. That is good.
Yeah, there was no big faulty roll ahead of time, but boy, this thing once it's got out, people are really interested. Look for it, folks. It's called the iBand, and we'll have more information that we'll be posting on our website as well, so you can look at that. And by the way, it's rather bare bones right now. I'll tell you what that's about coming up. But in just a moment, we're going to meet somebody who wants to spread the glove about Michigan. Well, you might say that our website this week is a work in progress. For a number of reasons, it's not as developed as I would like to have had. As a matter of fact, it's kind of skeletal right now. And I can't blame the guy who's sitting across from me here for that right now. His name is Ben Spilewski, and he is the man behind VC Web Design, the people who put our site together initially and have helped us to recover from some of my meddling in the background. Vince,
you can blame me if you'd like to.
No,
is not about the site itself. It's about our content.
Yeah.
We just didn't get the content up. And we have to thank Foster for doing this week after week. It's wonderful to be retired, but you're not really retired, eh?
No, it's hardly. And matter of fact, yesterday was a very busy day with Halloween with grandchildren and getting people organized for that. But Vince, hey, welcome in. Thanks so much for being here.
It's great to be back. It's good to see you.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about a number of things here, and the focus on this hour is going to be about businesses and getting their starts, and focuses on the metropolitan Detroit area. You began, I understand, way back when, in an incubator. Ypsilanti?
Spark East.
Okay. Now, just for sake of people understanding what that is, tell us what an incubator is.
It's a low-cost, usually, supportive environment for startups. You have counseling, cheap office space, admins.
So it's usually a building somewhere. This was in downtown Ypsilanti, right?
Right. Yep. Depot Town. Downtown next to Depot Town.
Right. Yeah. So with one of those older buildings down there, you got a little space, and you had a dream at the time, right?
I've had a dream for a while. But incubator helped move it along.
That's that's exactly it, isn't
right.
it? It's taking that dream and then making it a reality. So how did it do that for you?
Well, I moved from a bedroom in my house, which wasn't very convenient with a dog at the time. It allowed me to get a place with fellow entrepreneurs like myself, which is a big plus.
Big
having
plus,
other people
yeah.
to bounce ideas off of.
Yeah.
And a lot of networking opportunities.
You know, and that's really a big part of an incubator space, yeah. which is, you know, they provide other services and a little, maybe a little cheaper and more flexible, probably, rental
help,
arrangement.
Help with overhead, yep.
But,
yeah.
but it's the other people that have really great ideas yeah. talking back and forth over kind of over the virtual water cooler, right?
Right, exactly. And that happens every day. You get someone's talking about an idea, bouncing off you and...
Really cool.
And you ask somebody, you tell them, oh, I've got this problem. They say, oh, show me. And they'll come in yeah. and help.
That's
yeah,
really cool.
That's neat.
Yeah. So do you had your desire was to start a web design company?
Well, up until then, it's mostly been a hobby up until then.
Ah, okay.
And I decided, well, this could be something. Let's
yeah.
see.
Yeah. Okay.
So it was a way to really kind of launch a real company, right?
Yeah.
Instead of the hobby.
And fairly low risk because you're not stuck into like a year-long
yeah.
year-long lease.
That's really cool. Yeah. Now, we're going to be talking with people from Tech Town in our second hour, and those people are doing the same thing
also
here
in
metropolitan yeah. Detroit. Matter of fact, we're going to be talking a little bit with one of your clients who is growing a business there locally, and another fellow who's here who is also involved in a brand new business. So how long were you in the incubator there in Ypsilanti?
Just under a year.
Okay.
Yep.
And then you move from there to?
Around the corner.
Okay.
They like staying in town, and we wanted to stay in Ypsi, and so we found a place right around the corner from the incubator on Washington Street, if you're familiar with Ypsi.
Yes, yes, I am.
Yep.
So
and by that time, you already had employees, and they were used to driving there, so they could continue to drive
there.
That
was one of the reasons
there.
For the move, is
right.
the cubes in the incubator aren't very large. So as you add people, it gets a little crunchy. So.
How many people did you start with?
Well, it was just me, and I added one employee in the incubator.
Okay.
And we wanted to add a third. And
now, you sent me an article, which I will post to our webpage after the show is over, but about it was from, I think, the Ann Arbor News?
Ann Arbor News, yep.
Yeah, about the fact that you've just now moved into brand new space, and you've got quite a few more employees.
We're up to 10 now. We went from about 1,100 square foot space to 3,400 square foot space. So it's a big move for
wow.
us.
Wow. And how many clients do you have now?
Who? So it'll be 200 or
wow,
so.
Wow, yeah. That is impressive. Yeah. So your business has grown now enough that you're able to go into these new circumstances, these new areas. Matter of fact, let's just open the mic up and bring Mark Serra in at this point, because Mark, I think, go ahead, press that button and bring the mic up to yourself. Mark, thanks, first of all, for coming here.
Yeah, no problem.
Now, you've got a business that you're starting called Spread the Glove.
Spread the Glove, yes.
And give us a quick snapshot of what that is.
Yeah, Spread the Glove is basically a concept of taking the idea of loving where you're from, no matter where you are, and building a community around that. And we're trying to create an entire lifestyle brand around that idea. And in the process, connecting people from Michigan all over the country. And if we can do that, create and engage that community, then there's a lot of benefits to come on the backside of that too, even for talent attraction and economic development, things like that. Right now, lifestyle brand, very focused. We're launching our retail store online on Tuesday.
Cool.
Pretty excited. Yeah, we're hoping to have it up for today. But
well, I want to talk a little bit more about the content.
That's my
of
fault.
It. But now, how do you work with Vince?
Well, I needed someone to help me. I'm a good connector of people,
yep.
a good facilitator of relationships. I am not a web developer in any way, shape, or form. So I was living in Ypsilanti at the time that this concept kind of started to come together. And based on some referrals and some conversations and the fact that his office was right across the street from my loft, it worked out really well. Yeah, you could throw him stuff out the window.
Tell me something, Mark. What was the moment when it went from being just a, you know, it'd be kind of neat if we, to let's do it? What was that moment?
That's tough. I think I've always been inspired by human relationships and interactions. But I had all these friends who would hate Michigan for one reason or another.
Cold.
Cold, economy, jobs, whatever it might be. Yeah. And they leave. And then the day that they leave, all you see on social media is, I love Michigan. And I was always kind of inspired by that concept. And then on the backside of that, inspired by people who would never leave for those same reasons.
Yeah, okay. You know, now, did you have other people you were working with at that time, other people that kind of came together with this idea?
It was kind of my brainchild, yep. but knowing that this is a broad idea that there's no way I could do alone. And, so, you know, bringing some other people on board to help grow those ideas, and then getting Vince on board to help bring his vision to life.
I was just going to say that. It really came to life when you could launch your website, right?
Right. I think, yeah, because it brings it home a little bit. Now right. We're just not a Facebook page or a Twitter account.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of my saying this right, Vince. That's mm-hmm. where the birth of the brand is.
Oh, definitely. You can visualize that. That's kind of the anchor, usually, of the brand.
Because we get people who will call us or will send us emails and say, I've got an idea for this or that. How do I make this a reality? Right. And it sounds like, nowadays at least, yes, you've got to have something there. And I think that's probably something that you work with, you two guys. Yeah, you got to have a something here that people will want.
Right.
But beyond that, you've got to create the reality in this digital space so people can see it and interact with it somehow.
We were lucky in this case that, you know, Mark is a great visionary, and so he did a lot of the heavy lifting in this. We did the technical back end stuff, but the branding piece was all Mark.
Well, you brought a lot of technology and thought when we came to you through a referral,
to help us,
you know, design the next, and that's, I think that's the fourth.
At least the fourth iteration
of our website, but it changed quite a bit, and it changed some of the things that we did that we couldn't do before because the technology was different. You brought some new technology to us, and I bet you do that to a lot of your clients.
We do. And technology changes quickly, as you guys know. Every year is a new paradigm.
Something new.
Yeah. So a few years in the web world is, you know, ancient.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you a question. You told me about you gave me the article about Drupal and the attacks on it.
Yeah.
Drupal, as I understand, Vince, is one of those languages that's used to build websites in the background?
Well, it's a CMS framework. For those who are not familiar, content management system that allows people to log into the back end and modify their content.
Of the big three, Joomla, WordPress, and Drupal, that's the only one we haven't used. Because we use Joomla and WordPress.
You're probably glad you're not using it right now.
So right now we're happy.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how that's affected your customers. Hey, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to bring somebody else into this conversation who's been involved with a startup, and that is in our Detroit area called Yum Village. I can't wait to get a taste of that. All that coming up now on the Internet Advisor. This hour we're talking about innovation and getting your start on the web. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown here, co-host. And by the way, the first of 3 hours of our show today, second hour, we'll be focusing on cybersecurity. This hour, we're talking about innovation, about people who have an idea and decide, I'm going to go for it. And we've been talking with Vince Schmielewski, who is with VC Web Design out of Ypsilanti, the people who developed our web page, and also himself, somebody who grew up in, if you will, as a business within an incubator in Ypsilanti. And then somebody he has been helping there is Mark Serra with a site called Spread the Glove, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. And then somebody else we have in here now is involved in a fascinating site called Yum Village. And his name is Godwin. Godwin, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm super excited right now.
This is such a cool site. First of all, what is the concept and how did it start?
So the best way to kind of think about Yum Village is to kind of picture, I don't know if everyone's familiar with Airbnb, but essentially...
Yeah, Airbnb, right, where you rent out
your house
to somebody for a period of time, right?
Absolutely. So it takes that or borrows that same concept. It's more or less the Airbnb of pop-up restaurants.
Pop-up restaurants?
Absolutely. Last year, I had a vegan and gluten-free pop-up restaurant myself called Phenomenon. We would go around. Is everyone familiar with a pop-up restaurant?
No, please. Tell us what a pop-up restaurant is. It's fascinating.
A pop-up restaurant is essentially a low-cost way to become a restaurant temporarily for a day. You legitimately find a location temporarily for the day, usually somewhere that's closed or having a slow night, and then you negotiate terms to use that space for the
night. Also, an existing restaurant that's closed or is having a slow time. Okay, that's what it is. Okay,
absolutely.
And then you pop up with your special...
dishes or food or entire menu redesign just for the night.
That's so fascinating.
So this isn't like a speakeasy during Prohibition or anything, right? This is something a little different than that.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. You know, it started, I was a big fan of just ball games and going to see the Tigers play, but there was never really anything. I was a big time. You couldn't tell because I'm kind of a big guy. But I was a vegetarian for about 4 or 5 years before I started the pop-up restaurant.
That's and fascinating.
One of the biggest problems I had was I spent so much time, about 80% of my time, doing everything but cook the food. Mm. And then only 20% of the time cooking the food, which was really...
That's what your passion was. Yeah, exactly. Was to prepare a really neat meal for people.
Yeah. And so I started looking for an agent in the same way that like a musician or like an artist has an agent, and couldn't really find anything. And that's kind of how Yum Village
was born.
So this could be like a restaurant that maybe does breakfast and lunch and you do dinner. They might just do dinner, so you could do lunch. I mean, this is a way to kind of share that space. So it helps them as well as it gets you started until maybe this is a way to get started into a permanent restaurant space. And, and maybe this is what you always want to do is do this kind of round robin. Could you do either one?
Yeah, there's definitely a couple of different sides to the coin. You could be an existing restaurant that just wants to utilize your space when there's just nothing going on. And then as an up-and-coming chef, you could come in.
That's the other side of the coin, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're an agent, it sounds like, then, for the chefs.
Absolutely. We set up a location. We negotiate the terms for the chef, and then we take care of the marketing as well as pre-sell the tickets.
Oh, that is so cool. Now, is that what Yum Village has become?
Absolutely. Yum Village essentially finds location, and then we...
I see. You scout the locations. Dinners.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a dinner coming up on the 13th of November, which the chef is from Kaya out in Wild Lake, Kaya Smokehouse. His name is Jeff Rose. Uh-huh. And he put together an awesome four-course dinner spread that we're going to be serving in downtown.
And by the way... Vince, once I get back to the website, I will be filling that information in, so you'll be able to click on that and find out more information under the Yum Village about that the dinner that's coming up. So it's going to be it's kind of a kamikaze restaurant, you know, that just kind of drops into a space, you know?
Absolutely.
And so where is the space going to be for this one?
The space that we're going to have here is going to be right in downtown in one of the Quicken Loans Bedrock Opportunity Detroit buildings.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, it's kind of interesting because you could not have done this without the internet, right? You
could
not have done
this
before the
internet. Precisely.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you could develop, if you take this concept and the concept of a flash crowd, wow, could that be kind of interesting, right?
I'm glad you said that. We're actually working on an application right now where the guests that come to the restaurant can actually rate the chef live. And then that data is then aggregated and then presented to the chef in a dashboard format.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. So it's immediate feedback to the chef, but you're almost like a Yelp.
Yeah.
People can tune in and see it.
Absolutely. They can see exactly what's going on. They can rate the different courses, rate the chef themselves, and also rate the experience overall.
Wow. Now, Mark, as you're hearing this thing, I mean, I'm hearing that both of you had this kind of idea. So... what was it that was, and Governor, a question to the two of you, what was the thing that gave you the impetus to say, go for it? Mark, in your case?
Yeah, I think for me, it's just the power of people and to see what people can do when they come together. And it's funny that we couldn't do this without the internet.
That's, I think, a very important point, yeah.
You know, but in the same respect, we want to take this concept and look at it maybe like, how do we have done this in 1995? You know, because we're all about real human relationships too.
Ah.
So, but using the internet to do that and to help us facilitate things in real life rather than the other way around.
And Goblin, for you?
Well, my father, he actually was a software engineer who started his own company teaching folks how to use computers, and then eventually stopped doing that, moved to Florida, and now he has a food truck that he runs down there.
Oh, really? So, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'm done with the software, right? That's it. I want to talk to people all day long. I want to cook.
I want soft tacos, not software. That's what I want to get into. That's fascinating. Hey, Vince, along these lines, now we got two entrepreneurs here who are coming to you. Mark, in his particular case, came to you. Yeah, how do you help people balance? And Mark made an interesting point. We want it to be like 1985. In the sense of the relationships being there. Right. How do you balance out the digital, the bells and whistles, and all the cool kind of things you can do,
right?
But keep it balanced with the kind of things like the Yelp kind of, you know, feedback.
Connecting with real people?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what social media is all about, and that's what's been growing the most recently in my world. And so that's a bigger and bigger piece of any project we put together.
I think for a long time it was like, you know, if you build it, they will come.
Right. No.
And all the bells and whistles and everything else. And there's a lot of those great.
That
sparkles.
Happens a lot. People spend lots of money on this great website and don't tell anyone about it. It doesn't do you a lot of good.
So when people are coming to you and consulting with you, like these two guys are come to you and consult with you, what is your advice to them on how? What are the steps to start up, like with Mark and the spread the glove.
Well, Mark's a little interesting in that he does a lot of in-person events. So he's using his site as a way to gather people in the real world, which is a little different.
Mark, how does that work?
Well, you know, I like to look at our site almost as another virtual door for people to knock on and say, you know, we're coming here for a specific purpose. We're brand new. So we've only hosted a couple of in-real-life events, but using the power of social media and the power of the website, we can say, okay, you know what, now we can facilitate this Michigan-based event in Washington, D.C. or Texas or whatever it might be.
Oh, sure. I mean, outside the state, you've done these things.
Well, not yet.
That's, oh, okay.
But, I mean, vision, you know.
I got you. So what are the events that you've built so far?
Well, we've just done some launch events, and then we did kind of a meet and greet because we wanted to kind of put a face with our brand. Once again, you know, you exist online and using the power of social media, but in terms of building that real brand, which social media and our website is so important for, it's nice to kind of get out and shake some hands. So
sure.
We did a meet and greet right before our website, right after our website launched in Ypsilanti.
Okay.
200 people showed up.
Wow.
But, yeah, it was ridiculous, actually. We had no idea that many people were going to come.
But, I was pretty amazed at the number of people and the passion they showed for the...
That
what
is
Mark
great.
Was doing.
That's got to be really energizing to you.
Extremely. And, you know, I think that the thing that's good for us is we try to use, social media and our website to convey this feeling that we're trying to get. I mean, Spread the Glove says something. It's a call to action just as much as it is a community or a brand or a T-shirt or whatever.
Sure.
But sometimes it's a little bit hard to convey that passion and that sincerity digitally. So when you get out and people can see what you're doing, it works. I mean, it works to our advantage. And then when they go back home or they go back to wherever they are, and now there's something new, there's a new identity with that digital piece now because they've seen the faces behind it and shaking those hands.
Well, it helps that you have really great shirts.
It's like with Godwin, it helps you have really good food, too, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's definitely something going on with that.
Yeah, and you were mentioning the fact that, you've kind of created that situation, or you're trying to create a situation where people who come to these meals that you set up, these kind of kamikaze meals, they happen like almost like a flash mob, as Gary said, that they then have a chance to build the buzz about it.
Yeah, it's really interesting because normally there isn't really a way to get direct feedback with your food, but when the chef comes in and has that direct feedback, if they open a restaurant on their own, or they kind of branch out on their own, they've got a following now.
I want to talk with you a little bit more, Godwin, about the chefs when we come back. Godwin has got a project called Yum Village, and again, there'll be links to that on the homepage. And then also Mark Serra is with us, who has the Spread the Glove, which is a great site. And, of course, man helps those sites and ours, Mr. Vince Valesky, with us from BC Web Design. Well, this first hour of our show this week, and it's a three-hour show, by the way. Next hour, we're going to talk about cybersecurity as one of our main themes, and also about a tech incubator in the city of Detroit called TechTown. But this hour, we've been kind of talking about with two companies that have just started up recently in the state of Michigan, and that is Spread the Glove with Mark Serra, and then also Yum Village with Godwin, who's with us, and then Vince Malevsky is with us from VC Web Design, and we're going to talk about the relationship of all those. But before we get to that point, Godwin, I want to go back with you. Now, you had your own kind of pop-up restaurant, right?
Yes.
It was a vegetarian one.
Yep, vegetarian.
And so you would go from place to place, organizing a meal, having a special menu, right?
Absolutely, yep. So we would go from place to place, and I really just wanted to get our name out there.
You did that how long, about 4 years?
We did that for about a couple years.
Okay. Yeah. How was the experience for you?
You know, the very first pop-up ever that we did was very humble. We did almond meal vegan dogs. which
I love it.
Yeah, they
okay. I would have to just go to see what that was.
Well, you know, it was good. Maybe I can find some pictures there. But we had like a Middle Eastern style one. We had a Mexican style one. And then
I got you.
Yeah, and so different types of like your chili dog, but only good for you.
So where did you pop up?
We popped up at the Emory. We did some stuff at Deli in the Alley last year, and did a couple of test kitchen things. One of my partners here, Brent Foster from the Woodward Avenue Brewery, as the head exec chef over there.
Oh, that's really cool. So from that experience, you thought, as you said, these people need agents. So rather than going out and doing this on my own, I can make this happen for other people and have some of these great chefs, like, for instance, the one that's coming up on November 13th, is going to be down at One Word at Woodward Avenue, and the fellow who is doing the cooking there is from the Kaya Smokehouse in Walled Lake.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff Rose, he's an amazing, amazing talent. He was actually a chef over at The Roast. He was a chef at the Iridescence downtown, and then he was also a chef at Toast as well.
So when you go to the website, then you will then get you can sign up there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty simple. Right on the website, you can just go and click the buy tickets, and there's a little drop down, and you can pick how many tickets you want. It's all done mobile. Or through a tablet or through a telephone.
What is it, $50?
It's $50. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
But that's everything. Soup to nuts.
Yep, it's a awesome, great four-course dinner. But if you bring a guest and do a two, you can do a two for $85.
Oh, that's really good. So what a special date that would be for somebody, huh? For the guys, for our wives, huh?
Hey, you know, it won't, it's very...
Ed is tuned out.
Right. Well, you won't be able to see that or get that kind of experience again.
No,
this is kind of a once.
It's a one-time.
One
yeah, exactly. Life, once in a lifetime. Yeah. And you're getting a chef in this particular case, and some of the other chefs you're dealing with, I imagine, are really well-known in their particular restaurants.
Absolutely. So this is a good way for that chef to kind of expand their reach.
Has this been done anywhere else before?
You know, there are a couple situations where this has been done, but it's usually just done specifically through the chef themselves.
I got you. But they haven't had somebody like you who has taken the organizing out of it.
Right, exactly.
That is really cool. Who did your web design for you?
Actually, I used a template to do it.
That's right. Vince, that's okay, right? Using templates is okay.
Yeah, templates are great. It's also usually a low-cost option.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what people like Vince does with VC Web Design is you work in the back end, right, to make sure that the things are working for them that they need, like the CRM, right?
For his case, definitely. Things like calendars, other back-end tools you might want
to So
have
people can come to you with a concept. Mark, I understand that you did the design for your website.
I birthed the ideas. I have a very talented graphic designer that I work with.
Okay, but you came to Vince with that, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And then, Vince, how did you plug into that?
Well, it makes it a lot easier when someone has the front end already built for you. You just, attach all the bells and whistles in the back.
Right, and make sure that it runs properly. I know you've done that for us as well when something isn't working in the back end.
A couple of times. After you've broken something.
Oh, after I've broken it. Yes, exactly.
Hey, we do that regularly.
Yeah, by the way, we're in for a major tune-up soon.
Keep me on my toes.
Yeah. Oh, our, we'll get to that maybe later on. I don't, off the air, I'll talk about it. But in any case, okay, guys, where do you go from here? Now, the two of you, Mark and Godwin, you have these great concepts. So I understand for you, Mark, success is now dictating a move.
Potentially, yeah. Here's where we're at today. Today, we have our site content related to this community we're trying to build. Eventually, we would like to be a source for that same content for the same people. Our online retail shop launches on Tuesday.
Okay, and that's going to require
spreadbiglovemi.com, don't forget.
Oh, yes, that's right. And by the way, we have that on. We're going to have links up to it now. You can click off of our internetadvisor.net site and
but
get that.
For future, the idea is we're building this community first. I've had the opportunity to work with some of these other expat groups who are connecting people from Michigan or from Detroit, and for a very specific purpose. For us, we're saying, let's build this community, engage them, and then in the future, we can use that community for economic development. We can look at talent attraction, but that's our 2.0.
Okay, the sky's the limit, right?
I hope so.
Now, when you were talking in the break a little bit about moving to other, what are some of the other places that a business like yours, which is just taking off, would go to look for space?
Well, I don't want to speak prematurely here, but we're running this out of our 800-square-foot bungalow in Ferndale. So,
gotcha.
You know, the retail store launching.
It was like Vince. Korea. It was a bedroom, wasn't it, Vince?
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't have a dog though, so unfortunately. But you know, based on some of the relationships that we have, we're actually looking into a potentially getting a small space at the Grand River Creative Corridor at the 4731 Gallery on Grand River. So, okay. And they've been in the news a lot recently.
Yeah.
But.
And so what's happening is there are places like that are opening up. Godwin, are there places, for instance, too, that would be for you, would give you a little more elbow room?
Yeah, absolutely. One is a place called Bamboo Detroit.
Bamboo Detroit.
Absolutely.
Amanda Lewan, we love you. We've had her on. She's been great. She's suggested many people. Matter of fact, she suggested you. That was so cool that she got us in touch with
and
you.
And we haven't had them on since last week, so.
But they're doing a great job. They create a workspace where people can work collaboratively. They don't have to be working together, but they work side by side. It's a co-work space.
Exactly. You have a co-working space. It's been really cool to kind of be around that energy. It's kind of like the group effect. When you're around so many different creative people, you can't help but just push forward in a more creative way.
Have you found new ideas growing out of that kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. From point of inception of the idea to through actually like kind of building it within that co-working space, there's been kind of a pivot for the good.
Excellent. Hey, Vince, I want to bring the conversation around to you before we, just to kind of wrap things up. And we've asked this of you before, but it might be worthwhile to say it again.
Should I be worried?
No. For people who come to you, you know, with, I've got an idea.
Right.
Kind of like these guys here. I got an idea. What are some of the first things that you tell them they should do? The do's and don'ts. Major do's and don'ts.
It varies a lot from...
Build a website. That's what he said.
Well, a website's not the only thing we can do for you, but... It depends. I mean, usually we try to like talk them through it and make sure that the idea is actually, you know, profitable if they're looking for profit or if it's going to actually bring people in, how they're going to do that. We talk through the strategy of what they're actually trying to accomplish.
And that's very important, isn't it? You're helping. Yeah. I imagine for you and for Godwin as well, you know, that it helps you when somebody's asking you or challenging you on those things, helps you sort the ideas out yourselves.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's always... you never quite do everything you kind of thought you were going to do at the beginning. There's always twists and turns, and either because something doesn't work, you have to switch, or it works better than you ever thought, so you move in that direction, mm-hmm. right? And that, Vince, is another thing that you offer because you've seen what works online, and you've played with it enough times with your other previous clients, you can really help them.
We can help guide, but things change, and that's one of the benefits of working with someone like us is we can be flexible.
That's exactly. And you're in touch with things. There are some things that are happening that you can have a chance to help people get a sense of what's working best for you. Hey, I want to thank all of you. Vince, thank you very much for being with us from BC Web Design. You'll have links to all of these things that are coming up. We have links also to the Spread the Glove, which Mark, Sarah, you've got up there. Thank you very much for that.
And thanks for having me.
Thanks for going, just kind of pumping up Michigan. We love that. And Godwin, I am delighted to see, now this event's coming up in November, right? This
November 13th.
Okay, Neil. And you can go to, again, the link there to find out about that and to get tickets for that. And you got other ones coming up in the near future.
Absolutely, yes.
All right, so keep an eye on that. Great things coming. Speaking of great things coming, this next hour, we're going to be talking about cybersecurity. And Gary has a particular eye on that. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. Welcome aboard for the second hour of the Internet Advisor, or the first if you happen to be joining us just now. My name is Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, and we have an exciting program coming up. In this hour, we're going to be talking about cybersecurity on a big scale. There is a summit coming to the state of Michigan being called by the governor for later on in the month of November. Gary Baker, my co-host here, is part of the panels, and also we've got a representative from the military with us, Brigadier General Mike Stone from the Michigan National Guard. We're talking about cybersecurity. Well, this hour of our program, we're going to be talking about and focusing on cybersecurity, and I certainly have a celebrity in the house here to my right, Mr. Gary Baker. Gary, you're going to be part of that summit coming up.
I am. I'm actually helping chair the business track, but there's some great great speakers that are going to be part of the summit. Oh. We actually have one in studio. We'll introduce at the next segment,
yep.
Brigadier General Michael Stone. And there's a number of things.
Some of our old friends, Richard Steenan is there.
Richard Steenan is going to be there as well as David. And this is all sponsored, really put on by the governor. And if it hadn't been for having the best, most technical governor of all the governors in our fair 50 states, we wouldn't have this opportunity, yeah. and we wouldn't be so far ahead as we are today. So.
Cal, I have to say something. Cal Carson with us in studio here. This last week, talking about security, I got hit with something on my Mac for the first time.
Wow.
It was a virus of some kind. I don't know what it was. It hijacked my browser, but I was stunned. I thought we were bulletproof on Macs.
No. Once again, I'll say it. The Mac is not perfect. It just looks that way next to a Windows machine. matter of fact, it's a good thing you mentioned that because there are things that can affect it. I mean, right. they can be universal through browsers.
And then mine was through a browser.
And generally, that's where it'll come in through from. Matter of fact, Mac Group of Detroit is going to have a meeting in December where we're going to talk about that very thing, about how to secure your Mac, protect it from viruses and
Excellent.
Stuff like that. So stay tuned. Go to internetadvisor.net. We've got a link over there, and you can pick up all the information.
Or MacGroup.org.
Yes.
That's excellent. I look forward to that.
One of the first Mac groups in the country, really.
Yeah. What I'm delighted is, it's that you're dealing with it. You're not pretending, that it doesn't happen, because it does happen.
No. There is no computer that is
absolutely bulletproof.
Yeah. There is one. The one you've never taken out of the box and turned on.
That's the one.
Yeah, those ones will have no viruses at all, I guarantee.
Well, Mr. Mike Brennan's with us, of course, as he is every week with his MI Tech News headlines. And it's that time on our program once again to check in with Mike Brennan, chief cook and bottle washer and editor of MI Tech News. Mike, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thanks, Foster. That and 25 cents will get you a cup of coffee in the old days. I don't know if it will these days,
Let's look at some sample of the headlines that you have up this week so people get an idea of what MI Tech News is. I see here Michigan students are going to be participating in a collegiate cyber defense invitational. Looks pretty good.
Yeah, that's actually today, November 1st. They're doing that over at the Michigan Cyber Range, which is what Merit set up at Ann Arbor, or at least in the Ann Arbor area, where they simulate the internet. I mean, you're essentially, for all intents and purposes, on the internet, but you're really you're not connected to the internet.
Right.
And this is one of those capture the flag things where they have all these schools like Ferris and Davenport and Jackson and Detroit Mercy competing, trying to capture each other's flag, attack each other's network, get inside, and then whoever defends the best wins.
I love it. Well, and that's going on, of course, with the big cyber conference is going on in the state of Michigan this week as well, so it dovetails very nicely. Hey, I saw something here. Look, really interesting for me, and to me at least, it was that Toy Mail has won $25,000 in Cisco's Internet of Things Innovation Grand Challenge.
Yeah, about a week or so ago that happened. Third place they won, $25,000. Toy Mail is based in Grosse Pointe, and it was technology developed by a couple of university of Michigan graduates, and it allows parents to send and receive messages wirelessly through toys from a mobile app. So kids always respond to texts, and so I guess if you text them through their toys, then you get their attention, right? So.
I love it. What a great way of doing that. Hey, one other thing before we take a quick break here. ESD, I see the Engineering Society of Detroit, is hosting a job fair coming up.
A big one on November 10th out at the Sperman Collection, that big facility out in Novi. It's going to be 50 companies, more than 2,000 jobs available. Certainly, if anybody's interested in that, there's more information at my website. You can sign up there. They do request that you register. And if you're looking for a tech job, that'd be the place to go.
Yep, absolutely. By the way, folks, this is the kind of thing that you find in MI Tech News each week, and it comes to you absolutely free. All you need to do is go to internetadvisor.net, our homepage, scroll down the page, and when you see Mike's smiling face there, just click on the Subscribe Now button, and absolutely free for nothing, you'll get information on what's happening across the state, around the nation as well, in terms of technology. if you're an entrepreneur, you'll find events coming up where you can get together with other entrepreneurs. You'll also find sources for funding. And if you're a student, a job fair, for instance, lots of stuff that's there for you every week, including audio resources now that are also available through mitechnews.com. And again, that's free for you. Every week on Friday, you receive these headlines and many, many more in-depth looking at technology in and across Michigan and our nation as well. Mike, I want to wrap up with one thing here that I see is a little bit of a chest puff for you, and that is that mitechnews.com has been named to the Best of Mich Business Awards.
Yes, I was rather surprised on that. They contacted me. It's the Michigan Business and Professional Association. Going to get that award on November 18th. Of course, I share that with you, Foster, and Gary, and Ed, because you're part of the team, and we're trying to provide great news around the state, great technology news and business news, and so now we've been lauded for that, and I thank them very much.
That's nice to be able to get that recognition for all the hard work that you put in for so many years, Mike. Congratulations to you on that, and we're very proud to be able to bring this kind of information to our listeners as well. Mike, thanks again for being with us, and go polish up that the metal.
Thanks very much, Foster.
Take care. You know, Gary, when we started our program this hour, I was kind of teasing back and forth with Cal about security on a Mac and some problems I've run into this week. Can you think 16 years ago or more than that when we started the program, the whole subject of security or cybersecurity, I don't even know if the term was even existing at that time.
I don't think the term existed at all. We were worried about helping people get on and
deal on
with modem and NIT strings.
Yeah.
Modems talking to each other and all the funny noises and everything. And that was, a lot of the callers had that problem. Now it's ubiquitous, right? People can get on anywhere. And unfortunately, so can the bad guys.
Yeah.
And there's so much of us connected today that, that you don't even know where sometimes it's coming. Some of the bad things that can happen, where they're coming from today.
Right, I know, and there are two guys here, Cal and Ed. I know we're working within your corporations. You're constantly working on security as well, Ed, right? It's a big part of what you do.
All the time. A lot of it is automated, through the Microsoft security updates, and a lot of the antivirus is pushed down several times a day. Yeah, so, yeah. And every once in a while.
Major corporations have to.
Every once in a while, there's a major, a little scare, where you got to do some things.
Well, I'm just kind of using this as a background to the fact that we have, in our state of Michigan now, it's become something of a regular event. There is a cyber, what's called the North American International Cyber Summit 2014 that's coming up.
That's right.
And Gary, I know that you're involved in it, and we have somebody very special in the studio with us to talk about that.
That's right. Brigadier General Michael Stone. Mike, welcome to the I should say General, welcome to the program.
Thank you. You said it well, it's almost every year, and the first one was in 2011, and, we made a mistake, I think, when we planned the first one, and as the governor said, we planned too small.
Well, so, and it was the Michigan, was the Michigan Cyber Summit for the first 2 years,
yes.
And now it's the International North American Cyber Summit.
Absolutely. So the first time we did this, the original plan, when we did the strategic plan, which I'll talk about in a few minutes, we planned to do one every other year. And we knew there would be demand. We knew there'd be demand.
Incredible.
And we went to Ypsilanti the first time, and it sold out really quickly. But, we were successful in getting, Janet Napolitano here. We got Howard Schmidt from the White House here. Congressman Mike Rogers. So when we got that demand, it filled up immediately. And then the next time around, we figured, let's go to a bigger venue. We went out to Novi. Again, in great speakers,
sold out,
and the governor said, guys, we're thinking too small. This is not just about Michigan. Michigan's
right.
Laid its stake in the ground.
That's
this
right.
is now, like he said, like the North American Auto Show. We are laying claim that we are the cybersecurity center of North America, and we're going to have it at Cobo Hall. And lo and behold, I don't think the tickets have sold out, but the sponsorships have sold out weeks ahead of time.
Wow.
And so all the big name, and I don't have the list of corporate sponsors, but the fact
it's
that
huge.
AT&T, Deloitte, absolutely. Google, it's just amazing. Some of the Motorola, Symantec, Unisys, just
big players internationally and locally, the
just
ESD.
Just amazing, some of the players that have signed on, but... we grew out of Michigan, and no other state does this, right? And it's only because of of our governor that got this started.
You know, it's interesting. Maryland does something similar.
And they were at ours last year, right?
Absolutely. And they've been coming to all of our events lately. they actually were at an event in Grand Rapids at GERCON trying to get our talent out of here. And we were kind of joking with them to leave the room. Really, it's the talent really fight that's going on here.
Isn't that interesting? It's come down to that now.
Oh, absolutely. So, but, you know, Wisconsin just had their first... And they actually reached out to Michigan for help. And I saw, you know, General Dunbar, the Adjutant General of Wisconsin last week, and I asked him how it went. And he said it went great. But, you know, when I look, God love them. Wisconsin, they're great people. But
Hey, I'm a Badger.
They got so far to go to catch, to get anywhere near where Michigan
is. It was really because of the governor, though, that got this started. I really like some of the other governors we've had lately, but none of them would have been able to really understand the problems that, and it's because of his background and because of his foresight, I think.
Well, that and his leadership, I'll tell you this. A lot of people in the audience don't know what the National Governors Association is, but all the governors have committees, and 3-4 years ago they formed a cybersecurity committee, and of course, Governor Rick Snyder's co-chair with Governor O'Malley from Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That term just ended, and it has become such a pivotal issue in Washington, D.C. So we, the state of Michigan, the governor's office, a few of us, state police, myself, and a few others, help influence or write policy at the national level. What's the position of the national governors vis-a-vis Congress, federal, state, and our Constitution when it comes to privacy issues?
I know that interagency cooperation is a challenge. Well, we've seen this on the national level after 911, and just a huge challenge. What do you and the Michigan National Guard bring to the conversation here that's unique?
Well, first of all, it's because of your position as the director of the Joint Chiefs, right? Joint Staff, right?
Well, I was the director of Joint Staff, which is a domestic operations role. So let's answer the first question and talk a little bit, what's the National Guard? Because sometimes we make the assumption that everybody knows what the National Guard is, mm-hmm. and what it does. But in its constitutional role in peacetime, the National Guard works for the governor. We're used to tornadoes, floods, and everybody's used to the National Guard responding.
A citizen army, I think.
Citizen soldiers. In Michigan, you know, we have 11,000 soldiers in airmen. You know, you've got most people in Southeast Michigan are familiar with Selfridge, Air National Guard base.
Sure.
But the bulk of the force is part-time, you know. One in three Air National Guard is full-time, so two-thirds are citizen soldier airmen, and 6 out of 7 Army soldiers are part-time. And in Michigan, we have 44 armories. We have soldiers and airmen from every zip code. So first of all, with that premise, you can go down a path of talent and that kind of thing.
Exactly.
But we're 96% federally funded.
Yep.
There are still people today that don't realize, but your National Guard and your Army Reserve have been deploying quite a bit. You know, our Michigan National mm-hmm, Guard mm-hmm. has deployed over 24,000 individuals since 9/11. Wow. 21 wow. soldiers have died in combat for the Michigan Guard. And we are now fully funded when we deploy, unlike the Vietnam era and post-Vietnam era when you're used to maybe the old National Guard and weekend warrior kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We kind of laugh about that today. We are fully resourced, fully trained to go into combat as whole units and have done an amazing job over the last 13 years.
Now, the reason I asked that – Cal, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Just a curious question. We talk a lot about the big picture and how's this for the region, stuff like that. The Cyber Summit, when it boils down to the average me and you, how does that affect us here in Michigan?
How does the summit affect you and I?
Yeah, well, the common Joe that uses a computer every day.
Well, okay. So number one, I think the number one thing, if you go to the governor's cyber initiative, the existing one, mm-hmm. hint, hint, future product coming out, number one, it all starts with jobs and people. People are the center of gravity. In cybersecurity, in talent, whether it's disaster mitigation, risk mitigation, cyber attack, and deliberate attack, it's about people, and it's about talent and keeping it, training it, and vetting it, and there's different elements of that. It's about jobs. I'll tell you, part of the whole strategy, and the Michigan Guard has a piece of this, is how do we retain our talent in Michigan? You know, how do we turn it around from being a state that's lost, you know, people every year? And look at the resurgence here in Detroit. And, you know, we realized back 4 years ago, we did the first cyber initiative strategy for the governor, the team of us, that we had to flip it around. We were developing talent and losing it to the East and West Coast. How do we create an ecosystem where jobs, companies want to come here?
Yeah.
And then look at, think about a citizen soldiers, something the governor picked up on right away. If you've got, if you're committed to your nation wearing a uniform part-time, and you've got a good civilian job, you're going to stay. Both in the Guard. It's a retention issue for the Michigan National Guard, and it's a retention issue for that. So General Vadnais, the adjutant general's my boss, very quickly realized that it wasn't about fighting for force structure. It was about fighting for the right type of units in the future, which I think we have a break coming up to talk about afterwards.
Now, let's talk about that, because let's talk then face towards the future. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, too, is the fact that you kind of straddle both the worlds of the local and the national.
Yes, and we have a foot in both worlds.
And because of that, a very valuable role to play. Brigadier General Mike Stone with us here is the Assistant Adjutant General for Installations in the Michigan National Guard. Back in just a moment to continue this conversation on cybersecurity.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Thank you very much for being with us. We're talking about the North American International Cyber Summit coming up November 17th at Cobo Center here in Detroit. And with us in studio is Brigadier General Mike Stone, who is the Assistant Adjutant General for Installations of Michigan National Guard in the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Thanks, Mike, very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Gary Baker, also part of the organizing of this Cybersecurity Summit coming up on November 16th.
That's right. General Stone is one of the speakers, but we have a number of other really great speakers. And we're able to, as the general was saying, that we're able to attract a lot of that attention because of all of the different things that are going on here, like, you know, the cyber range. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. To wrap up where we were before the break. And I'll tie it into the cyber range here. The National Guard's got one foot in the Fed, one foot in the state. So, you know, we work for the governor, but it gives us unique access. So, for instance, in the Army, cyber's new. You know, they just created a Cyber Corps, Army Cyber Command. So we're bringing in Lieutenant General Cardone, who's the cyber commander for the U.S. Army.
Wow.
So that's kind of unique to bring him in. And we're bringing in David DeVries, who's the Deputy Chief Information Officer for the Department of Defense. So we're bringing in, and he's a Michigander, by the way.
So we're
bringing in these federal operational cyber folks that work for NSA and the policy guys from the Pentagon to talk the federal side of it vis-a-vis the state. And what's interesting is the federal government's focused, and U.S. Cyber Command does a brilliant job focusing on the top secret domain. But what Michigan decided to focus on was the unclassified domain. We knew Maryland, NSA, and that was part of the deliberate strategy with the governor 3.5 years ago when we rolled out our program. We knew we couldn't get those federal top secret dollars here in Michigan, but we knew darn well with the critical infrastructure, the big three here in Michigan, the talent, the unclassified domain was not being met. And that's what we've gone after.
And that's as you said, the businesses, like that's major corporations, like Big Three and all the rest of
it. So when we look at like the Nigel Francis, his 30-year auto strategy, you know, for MEDC and state government working with the Big Three, cybersecurity and automobiles, I'm sure you've talked about on your show, that overlaps perfectly with where the Department of Defense is trying to secure next-generation weapon systems.
And you really serve as a bridge. With the Michigan National Guard, you serve as a perfect bridge between the two. Now, let's talk about the cyber range, because one of the news items that Mike mentioned, by the way, in his thing, was some students using the cyber range.
Yes. So the Michigan cyber range, is the backbone of that is the Merit Network, which is over 4,000 miles of closed fiber. Connects your universities, community colleges, and 67% of your high schools in Michigan. That was one of the main assets we were not utilizing that we went after. So the Michigan Guard, we've connected the 110th Air Wing in Battle Creek, Fort Custer in Battle Creek, Camp Grayling in Battle Creek, and we've secured funding from third parties and non-federal funding to connect Combat Readiness Center, Training Center Alpena, and Selfridge. So we can use that tool for training, and the original plan was interagency training, bring in the Fed, state, local, how do you respond to a cyber attack, that kind of thing, and be that place where everybody in the country comes to do those large-scale exercises. So the cyber range has done amazing things, but what we didn't know 3 or 4 years ago when we set out on this course was all the extra demand that's coming with it, and the training, the workforce retraining guardsmen. We're going after force structure now in the Michigan Guard for a signal unit that's a network defense team, over 600 part-time positions, all with IT backgrounds. Wow. And we're dispersing them in armories near cities where there's a lot of economic growth. So, fantastic. You know, we're going to be sending people off to a lot of active duty schools, getting NIST NSA certificates, wow. coming back, and having some fresh talent that can plug into our corporations in Michigan.
And when you train military personnel, right, in all the yes. branches, and you're training them here in Michigan, guess what? They're probably going to stay here.
Exactly. So we're also going after using the Michigan Cyber Range with community college partners and university partners to retrain guardsmen for those NIST NSA certificates, because that'll be a precursor for them getting their military occupational skills.
Sure.
So we're trying to create that ecosystem Wonderful. Where the Michigan Guard goes after space and cyber assets.
Now, I want to kind of bring things back around to you, Gary, because you're involved in the business panel
that's correct.
In there.
Yeah, I'm
and
sure
you said,
of that.
You know, that. The Michigan, the wealth of things we've got going on here are that we're dealing with the non-classified element,
yes.
which is the businesses. And Gary, that's I know right. that you are involved in a field, your company as a bank, and so security is enormously important for that.
Yeah, you think?
Companies like that.
You know, it's
I want it to be important.
It's kind of like Willie Sutton, you know, when asked why he robs banks, he said that's where the money is. Well, guess why the cyber crooks are going after the banks, right?
Absolutely.
And but it's healthcare and it's trade secrets from our you know, our automotive industry and just all of our own personal information. By bringing that kind of critical mass together, which is what the governor was doing and is doing with the cyber summit and many of the other things, and that's really what General, you're head spearheading.
Absolutely. And, you know, General Vadney went to the governor last year and asked for a Michigan National Guard tuition bill. Mm-hmm. And we were one of seven states that did not have one. In bipartisan support, unanimously passed the House and Senate. We have a clause in there to use our $4,500 a year for Michigan Guardsmen in good standing for vocational training. So now we're working with Cisco.
Oh, excellent.
We're working with
wow.
Wayne County Community College.
Oh, wonderful.
Alpena Community College, each both got $2.5 million for cyber retraining mm-hmm. and targeting veterans. So we're using those dollars to attract talent coming off active duty and retrain them and do tailored classes for NSA NIST certificates here in Michigan.
Boy, there's not only the opportunity for the military, former military, in cyber jobs, right?
Yes.
Security. But, I mean, we don't have enough of them, and we can't get enough of them. And so there's, you know, by having this critical mass here, there's a lot of people out in maybe in an IT field that isn't security oriented that can go here and, by the way, get a little bit of raise in pay because we can't find people. So we're raising pay to
yes.
try to bring people in. But people even outside of IT can move into this area. Right?
So to kind of get back to Cal's question initially, how does it affect the common Joe? One of the things is it's going to mean odd job opportunities.
Absolutely.
And when people are going in and getting technical degrees, or I have a grandson, for instance, who's going in getting kind of practical degrees mm-hmm. at a local community college in computers, for instance, that there would be an avenue for him then to go on and to get a practical training in this kind of an area.
Absolutely. And if you can get the double word score of a citizen soldier, they go off to military training that ties to the civilian and back and forth. We expect, and that's why we have the CIO kitchen cabinet at state
that's
level
right.
that David Bean leads that you're on, Gary.
Yes.
We're watching very closely, working with Workforce Development, LARA, the Unemployment Commission, MEDC, Economic Development Corporation, to look where the demand is and align that and to make sure that our talent matches that. And it's really about mission. It's about retention of the Michigan Guard, but it also goes to relevance and we see this also bringing in a lot of federal dollars.
It is.
Yeah, so Cal, we may keep you off the corner this next summer, but getting you involved in some other vocational training to take your skills, you know, maybe into the military.
I don't know. I mean, I'll put on some camo if it make my life much more better. Sure, why not?
And pick up a raise in pay? Sure, why not?
I was curious. Do you take people like, for instance, Cal, out of a professional background and bring them into the National Guard?
Sometimes that happens. We get a lot of demand now at these cyber conferences and luncheons and breakfast series that we do with talent. If somebody is a little more mature in age that hasn't ever been in the military, we also have the Michigan Civilian Cyber Corps, which is something with people with the right credentials that Michigan State Police, the National Guard works with David Bean and Technology Management Budget and has volunteers for that cyber emergency if it ever happens.
Oh, really?
And absolutely.
Cal,
so
they're calling for you.
They're
well, that's a perfect match. Never been in and mature.
And we're there you go. And we're We're using the Michigan Cyber Range and using a product called AlphaVille to do attack defense scenarios with critical infrastructure, all unclassified, which is driving some people crazy in D.C. But we're on top of the hill and we're moving forward. And,
well, speaking of D.C.
And you just had a tabletop exercise last Friday. And again, it's not only about keeping the federal government and the state government and the military secure, but this is spreading out.
Everybody.
I mean, the banks have to participate.
Well, we talked about this once before.
All the other companies,
the
utilities,
the SCADA.
That's right. So DTE
hugely
energy,
important. Our lights, our power, our water, everything like that is now wrapped up in this.
Our first two partners were DTE Energy and Consumers Energy. Yeah. And I remember I met with Senator Carl Levin about 3.5 years ago after we finished our strategy, briefed him. The next phone call was to DTE, and I didn't even finish my sentence, and they said yes. And they were writing a check to the nonprofit to get this whole program started, to get the product built so that we can do the attack defend.
I bet there's a lot of states that are jealously looking over the border.
Oh, yes. And matter of fact, we're going after a cyber protection team at the National Guard at the federal level. And we had every state in the region called us asking to partner with Michigan because they knew we were going to win that competition.
Boy, as Michigan, it is wonderful to be number one again.
It is. This is an area
clearly
where we own the unclassified domain in cyber
clearly
national.
Number one.
And it's a great, because this unclassified domain, by the way, folks, is no slouch. I mean, it's really the meat of where our lives meet the internet in many, many ways. Hey, General Mike Stone, thank you so much for being with us. This is going to be an incredible conference coming up. It's called the 2014 North American International Cybersecurity Summit. And Gary, I know we'll have a great report from you afterwards.
We're looking forward to it. And people can sign up, go to the online, and it's $99.
www.michigan.gov/cybersecurity, one word.
Back in just a second to talk about Tech Town. Well, guys, in the second hour, we've been talking about security, cybersecurity, but also about gathering talent and training talent and launching businesses in cybersecurity, but in so many other ways. In our first hour, we talked with people who have been launching businesses, and that is the theme of a place called Tech Town. And with us right now is Paul Reiser, who is the Managing Director of Technology at Tech Town. And, Paul, thank you very much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor.
I am glad to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Hey, let's start off, first of all, about talking about what Tech Town is, because it is a location.
Right in the Midtown area of Detroit, Michigan, right in the heart of the New Center area. And Tech Town is actually Detroit's most established business accelerator and incubator in the city. And essentially what that means is we provide a number of resources and programs and services to help aspiring and or current entrepreneurs fulfill their dreams and build great businesses here in the city of Detroit and actually in the Detroit region.
And if we could look around that one building just down the road, we could actually see Tech Town, see your building from where we are in the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building. So it's located right here, kind of in Midtown, just on the other side of Wayne State Campus. So a wonderful location to grow these small companies.
Absolutely. We like to state that we're kind of at the nexus of the Detroit Innovation District, which is just recently announced in the past few months. But it's really kind of where talent, you know, technologies and capital kind of converge. So we have an open door policy. We invite all who want to pursue their dreams with respect to entrepreneurship and business. We're very fortunate to have, as you stated, a number of great kind of neighborhood assets that surround us, which many people know these names of Wayne State University,
right.
Next Energy, and Henry Ford Health Systems, and the list goes on and on. So we're right in the middle of everything that's happening.
And Paul, this is even more than just real estate, though, in a location. It really personifies what's going on in the city of Detroit and the small entrepreneurial community. And a lot of times people that aren't even located there as part of the incubator use that to come to different events that you hold and whatnot. I was just there with Renaissance Connect about a week and a half ago. Wonderful opportunity to get big companies to buy from little companies, right?
Absolutely. We are what we see as a true community asset. And We make our space available for not only co-working space where entrepreneurs can be with other founders and be around great activity, but as you stated, a number of wonderful activities any given day, any given evening, or right. any morning. You may run into great events that are happening at Tech Town, whether it be from A&E to Forbes magazine to local companies who are just hosting events there.
Great. It's kind of become a hub for that kind of activity. By the way, I want to mention, you spoke about incubating different products and projects. We have somebody with us now. Justine Hsu is one of the folks who's involved in that, right? Justine, welcome to the show.
Hi.
How you doing, Justine?
I'm good. So happy to be here.
That's good. It kind of blew us out of our seats, the volume there. But Justine, tell us about your participation at Tech Town. How are you participating there?
Sure. So what we did is a program called DTX Launch Detroit. Mm-hmm. And it's a 10-week summer accelerator program for college students and recent graduates who are aspiring to launch a technology startup.
Oh.
The beautiful part is that they're willing to accept people, as Paul mentioned, who really were only in the idea stage. And my team in particular had virtually no experience in business whatsoever.
Wow.
So we entered this program to basically see what it took to really launch our own business and if our business model was viable.
Yeah.
And it was really the most challenging but really amazing experience that we've participated in, you know, as young adults, because not only did they teach us all the fundamentals,
mm-hmm.
you know, what is a value proposition, what is a business model canvas, things that we had no idea about prior to entering the program, we did exhaustive market research. The whole premise behind the program is that you don't assume your idea works. You have to go out and speak to your potential customers.
Wow, yeah.
So through this program, we interviewed over 120 students, you know, educators, mm-hmm. people, you know, in our domain. We're working on an ed tech product. And really were able to validate our idea. They connected us to, you know, phenomenal coaches and mentors.
Oh, that's wonderful. So what was the verdict? I'm dying to find out. What was the verdict?
the verdict is we're grateful to them. We've actually moved forward, you know, through the program. We found that we really caught traction in the community, and the problem that we were working on seemed to be a very real one. And so we've just entered incubation with Tech Town. So we're now in the next stage, so to speak, of the business development process. And basically, just to give you a brief idea of what we're working on, my team and I are all educators and advisors for urban youth mm-hmm. in the city of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
We are building a mobile app that can essentially connect youth to educational and professional development opportunities
Ooh.
In a personalized way.
Yeah, yeah.
And so after speaking to, like I said, over 100 people in the community, we found that there's a real need. Youth just don't have information about different career paths or what kinds of opportunities are out there.
So this is a way of connecting them to the mentors or to the people who can help them get traction and get their feet going in certain directions.
Correct. Not just mentors, but programs, you know, internships,
Excellent.
Summer programs hosted by colleges, college
Wonderful.
Fairs, workshop events,
so this
et cetera.
Is this a reality yet then, or are we now in the next stage of we're going to be getting this thing on the ground?
Yeah, we're actually in the next stage of getting it on the ground. Woo-hoo. So we have a business model and a landing page going, and now we are actually in the development stage. So we're just trying to build the app and get some beta testing going
cool.
by the end of December.
Hey, Paul, this sounds like it really is a cool thing because you get to have the excitement kind of rub off of being with people. You know, like this young lady here, Justine, who's getting all this going. I mean, it must be kind of neat to be around people who are just kind of catching fire.
I mean, but it is truly in the essence of the word inspirational. And so combining, you know, the kind of entrepreneurs that Justine represents with her team, Evolve, and just all of the great activity that's going on in the city of Detroit, from the Detroit Innovation District to the university stuff that's going on to the great announcements around technologies that are being created, like Justine's company through startups, private industry that we're starting to work with closer. It's just a burgeoning area of innovation and entrepreneurship, and it's truly the place to be right now. I think we're on the brink of something monumental.
Kel, I think you had a question.
Yeah, Paul, I got to ask you. I mean, when you're in a place where there's a bunch of energy and excitement and stuff like that and opportunity and the tools are put in place to be able to give that type of atmosphere to it, what's the most unusual thing you've seen come out of here so far that you could talk about?
I tell you, some of the technologies that I see, and I feel privileged, honestly, to be around great entrepreneurs like Justine, and some of the technologies and ideas, I quite often say to myself, why didn't I think of that? So, I mean, great ideas, and really bringing entrepreneurship to the forefront of economic empowerment, job providing.
That's excellent.
And really building our city, I think, is what's most important.
Paul, thank you so much for being here and letting people know about Tech Town, that it's here. We're also going to be having a link on our homepage to that as well. And Justine, I'm so delighted that you've gotten off the ground. You're not in the incubation scene. We want to talk with you when you got this thing going, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks so much for having us.
We'll follow up with you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Paul. We'll be following up with you as well and the other folks that you have done such a great job of helping get off the ground. Thanks very much. Paul Reiser, who is the Managing Director of Technology for Tech Town, and Justine Hsu, who's got a great application out there for young folks. Delighted to have them with us here on our program. Okay, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the experts are in the studio. We want to hear from you at 800-859-0957. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. Welcome to this call-in hour of the Internet Advisor. That's right. Imagine that you had an opportunity to talk with three experts about computers, and it would cost you absolutely nothing. Well, that's what you have right now. If you call us at 800-859-0957, we have three computer experts in studio, Cal Carson, Ed Riddell, and Gary Baker. I chip in to help a little bit. But you have to call 800-859-0957. Welcome aboard the Internet Advisor. I'm sorry. We just have too much fun here on the inside. Listen, I know that this is a unique opportunity for some of you out there. You're saying, wait a minute, what? I can call in with my question? That's exactly it. Normally, matter of fact, for about half the year, you can do that regularly on Saturdays with us at this time, between 5 and 6. But during the winter months, because of the sports schedule, we don't get a chance to be with you live here on our flagship station at WJR. What that means is that right now, you have an opportunity. Nobody's standing in front of you in line to call 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. We will take your question and do our very best to solve your computer problem. So you have a unique opportunity here. And our mantra is the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. And when you do ask questions, often it helps lots of other people as well. So please, you have a unique opportunity here. Don't think, oh, gee, if I ask that question, I'll sound dumb. No. We've all been making enough mistakes over the years that don't worry about that. We've all been there before. So 800-859-0957, first come, first served. Annie Nichols, who was our lady of the telephones, is here. Thank you. Mike Stett, thank you very much for being our engineer, as well as Rich Luker, who's in the background, too.
You know, so, Foster, if it'll help people to feel more comfortable, I volunteer myself to ask all the dumb questions for the next 60 minutes.
I was just going to say, how do you think, how does anybody think our you know, I mean, the way that we know how to answer these questions is we've made those mistakes, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, yeah, one of the questions we had last week, a listener wrote in, and we emailed several times, is that they were having difficulty trying to get a printer to work, and they tried installing the software that came from the manufacturer. Then they tried downloading new software, and they were unsuccessful. And so one of the things we suggested is to uninstall everything that you've done, you know, that you've installed or downloaded, and then this time unplug the compute, the USB cable going to the printer.
Ah.
And then and try installing the software, either that you downloaded or from the CD. It will then prompt you, you know, we don't see your printer. Would you please plug it in for us? at this point so that we can discover it. And then, miraculously, everything worked. And that's especially true with, I believe, what was it?
The HPs?
The HPs, yes. But it was also particularly true with the Canons that I bought both my children for college.
Oh.
I bought them both something very similar, the XP220 and 320, because they use the same cartridges. Mm-hmm. And both of them, the only way I could get them to work is the instructions that just gave you.
You know, a lot of us have used non-authorized cartridges over the years.
Yep, yep.
So I came in this today, and somebody here, won't mention who, but somebody here came to me and said, I can't get my black printer or my black print cartridge to work.
Mm-hmm.
And we sorted through, and he said, and near the end, I said, well, how old is this? He goes, that's the point. It's only about 6 months old. And I said, did you use an HP cartridge?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, is that a problem? I said, well, some of the new printers, because they're so cheap today, they really want you to use their ink, and they're starting to put chips in so that you have to use an authorized cartridge. And in this particular case, he said, but the colored ones work, but the black and white one didn't. The black ink didn't work. So he's going to go back. And he actually thought this was probably the case after reading online some of the blogs. So he went out and he bought a cartridge, but he hasn't put it in yet. He's going to put the HP cartridge in, and I'll bet it works.
Yeah.
Because he actually took the printer in to where he bought it, and he said there's nothing wrong with the printer.
No, it's not.
It was the black. It wasn't the color. So he was able to kind of pseudo get black. It's not a crisp black, but by just using the color.
Yeah, if you put them all together, essentially, you can kind of get a muddy black out of it.
In the case of the Epson printers, not only is it do they want you to use their particular cartridges for that particular function, but they also have a different ink structure.
Oh, really?
And if you don't use the proper Epson ink in the Epson printers, the nozzles will clog, and the printer is now just shot.
Yes.
So it's real important. Sometimes you have to use the right stuff. I have, over the years, used to try and use, remanufactured or third party.
Yeah, I think we have.
And I have found in the long run that you just, it's worth it just to pay the few extra bucks.
But $110 for a single cartridge is just, so painful.
Now, I have found, by the way, because I ran into the same problem. Like 2 years ago, I bought an HP PhotoSmart. A very nice wireless printer, and I got the replacement cartridges, and initially it howls, it comes, pops up all sorts of things saying, oh no, the world's going to end, la la la. When I worked my way through all of them and just said goodbye, 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 it finally went ahead and worked. So instead of actually physically damaging the thing, they put up a lot of these scare things. And I think if you can, at least in my case, when I was able to work past them, I was able to get in. Hey, we got a caller on the line, so I want to get out there and talk with, I think we have Bob from Rochester on the line with us here on the Internet Advisor. Bob, thanks for calling in. What can we do for you?
Well, I downloaded some programs on my computer off the Internet, and now my browser has stopped working, and it says I got all kinds of stuff in there.
Stuff. That's a very good description. Stuff. All right. What browser are you working with?
I was using
Internet Explorer, right?
Internet Explorer, yes, sir.
And what version of Windows are you using?
8.
Oh, this is
8.1. It's a Hewlett Packard I just bought a year or two ago, and it's whatever they got on there.
Oh, that's okay. Now, we're going to put you on hold, Bob. And we're going to put our heads together here, and then right after the break, we're going to come back and see if we can offer some solutions to you and to anybody else who gives us a call at 800-859-0957. Thank you so much for joining us. A unique opportunity here we have to talk with you live on WJR, our base station, our flagship station here in Detroit. And that means you can call us right now at 800-859-0957. And join a whole bunch of people, Bob and Michael and some other folks who are calling in right now. And we have Cal Carson and Ed Riddell and Gary Baker and myself, Foster Brown, here. We'll do our very best to answer your questions. Now, Bob, we've been tossing this around behind the scenes. You have a Windows 8 machine, an HP, right, that you bought?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And what happened was that suddenly your browser was hijacked, as we say. And by the way, sir, doesn't mean you were doing anything bad. It just happens sometimes you can go to some of these poison sites, and all of a sudden it takes over your browser, and when you try to find something, it'll take you to this weird website, and it's annoying. Matter of fact, Cal, I was talking to you before about I got nailed on my Mac with that conduit virus. Yep. That one that's just maddening because it's popping up all sorts of search places you don't want to go. Now, Ed, you looked at a little research on this with a Windows 8.1 machine.
Right. With the simplest thing, with any time your computer becomes infected or there's some drastic change that you want to just, I just want the way it was yesterday or an hour ago or last week. In the Windows 7 environment, we called it System Restore. Matter of fact, in all Windows environments, we called it System Restore. But Microsoft, in their infinite wisdom and knowledge, and because they can do it.
Tongue firmly in cheek.
Yes, they changed it to Recovery.
Right.
So from your Windows 8 desktop, you know how you can just start typing a search term and it'll pop up the search window. Or you got the magnifying glass in the top right-hand corner. If you just type in Recovery, that will bring up the option in your Charms menu on the, or in the Search menu on the right-hand side, the ability to bring up your Windows 8 Recovery, which is System Restore.
Right. And then in there you'll find
that I have the ability.
I don't know why they decided to give all these different names, but if you look through the choices you have, essentially one of them says you can recover all of your files the way they were before. We won't damage any of your files, but we'll get rid of this annoying program for you and kind of scrub things up.
And you'll be presented with a date and time. So I'd like to do a recovery till yesterday or last Thursday.
And that should take care of it on Windows 8.1.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you tried that yet, or does that sound reasonable?
Not. I will try it though. Okay. Now, a question for you is, what kind of a malware or protection program would you suggest? I don't mind buying a program,
right?
But I hate getting all these flags coming up and say, buy our program, buy our program. And I don't know the quality of them.
Okay, so Windows 8 comes integrated with an excellent antivirus program, but it is not the best anti-malware program. So I would use the standard Microsoft antivirus. And if you're using McAfee or Norton as your virus protection because it was shipped from Hewlett-Packard and they may have...
Good point.
They may have pre-installed it. I'm not sure. Are you paying for existing antivirus?
No, I am not. At this time,
Okay, good.
Okay, but you are using the native Microsoft antivirus program.
I believe so.
It's called Windows Defender.
Windows Defender. Thank you, Foster.
Right, it's part of it.
Defender, yes.
Okay. Then, personally, if you want you want real-time protection, which it sounds like you do, I would go to malwarebytes.org and download their product.
Mm-hmm.
They have a 30-day trial. And when you install it, it'll automatically enable the 30-day trial. And after that 30 days, if you're satisfied, you could pay the $25, I believe, is it 50? It may have been raised to 50. I don't know.
It's worth the investment, though, because it's very good real-time protection.
It is not a one-year like Norton or McAfee. It is a lifetime.
So that's a big difference.
It's based on your email address. So if you're going to subscribe to it and you provide it to them for purchases, they're going to email you a license key. We had a caller, a listener, said, I purchased malware. I was in the 30-day period, but I never typed in the key, and the 30 days expired. They went to Malwarebytes. They went to the website, and they emailed them the key again.
Yeah, right. So that's a good investment. Malwarebytes, period. You can get a free version of it, or as Ed was saying, you can try the 30-day trial, and if you'd like that, that will give you real-time protection.
And Malwarebytes is on internetadvisor.net. It's on our website under the toolkit. You were going to say that, Cal?
God bless you.
And underneath the anti-malware there, you'll see a link for Malwarebytes because it's spelled Malwarebytes.
.org. Okay. Org. So try those things out and let us know. Let us know how it works for you, okay? All right, let's step out to Michael in Novi. Mike, how can we help you here on the Internet Advisor?
I have a Dell XPS PC. I'm running Windows 8.1, and it's about 11 months old. Ever since I've got it, I've had issues where it just periodically crashes, or even when it does some of the a PC update and it reboots, it'll hang on the Dell screen. So oftentimes I have to pull the power cord, depress the power button to get it to actually boot back up. So I'm trying to figure out where to start on identifying the issue. Number one, why is it crashing
right.
fairly regularly, and it's picked up more over the past 3 or 4 months. And then is it maybe something with the power supply? That's the reason it's hanging on startup, and I have to unplug it and depress the power button.
Hmm.
You know, the first thing that came to my mind was, number one, you were running Windows 8.1. I'm sure you've probably been doing all the 8.1 updates to the machine. Is that correct?
Yes, I have it set up to automatically update.
Have you also been going to the Dell website and doing updates to the hardware itself on a regular basis?
I'll have to double-check it, but I believe I have it set up to automatically do the Dell updates as well.
I would double-check that first and make sure you're doing that, because sometimes they do firmware changes that can affect how the power works on the machine and that sort of thing. Yeah. If you have both of those under control, then now you could, if you haven't still having problems, then now you can start looking at the hardware and saying, well, maybe there's something wrong with this or that. But you want to make sure all the drivers and things that deal with the hardware
because
are
when
up
you
to
go,
date as
yeah,
well.
And when you go to Dell and ask for their help with troubleshooting, that's the first thing they're going to ask you.
They're going to want you to load them all up
exactly.
anyway.
Right.
Yep. And the other thing is that Dell provides you with diagnostics that you can download
that's
and
true.
Run.
That's true, yeah.
So that's one option.
And you want to do them ASAP because if you have a one-year warranty on that machine, you don't want that to run out and there's a hardware problem with it. So you want to start addressing these things today. I'm sorry, I'd continue.
The other thing is that you said you had the Dell XPS, correct?
Correct.
Is that the 4-gig version or the 8-gig version?
For the RAM?
Yes.
I actually have 12-gig in it.
Oh, you do? So it might be a slightly different, because I have the Dell XPS and it's the ultra thin. And mine only has the, I only have the 4-gig version. But I was going to say, I thought there were a number of mouse and glide point updates that were causing, and wireless drivers as well, that were causing, you know, crashes and stuff like that at really inappropriate times, you know. So I know in our environment, so like the glide point mouse has always caused us
Mike, problems. Have you tried any of the forums, like on Dell?
I haven't. I was in my car earlier, heard you guys.
Oh, okay.
Like, you know, I think I'll call in real quick. I know that I'm coming up on the year, and I've been seeing the diagnostics that's run, so I didn't know if I should just contact Dell and have them check, look at the diagnostics or if there's some place I could start.
Well, the other thing you could do, now, have you got the hard drive? Is it solid state?
No.
Really? Okay. Hmm. So I was going to say that you might want to run a scan disk as well, only because it has crashed a number of times if you haven't done the disk check. So that's the other little gotcha. If it seems to be crashing on reboots or in the middle of something, you could have some corrupt files, and you might start seeing it crash more frequently as it's stumbling across a bad sector.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the one thing about Windows is that it does not notify you, hello, we have a disk error. No, you won't see anything from Microsoft in that.
Before.
So you have to look in the Windows Event Viewer and look for disk errors.
It sounds like one
now,
bottom line.
Like a Mac. Now, Macs will tell you that you're experiencing a disk error.
Well, yeah, if you run the right utility for
it. Oh, it's the same way?
Do that, yeah. It necessarily won't come up and start screaming at them to you.
I wish they would.
Yeah, it'd be a nice touch.
You know, it's like a fire alarm in the house. If there's smoke, set off the alarm.
Yeah. But you definitely want to get with Dell before your warranty is up. And go ahead and let them run the diagnostics. Even if they tell you, well, you have to load this driver, that driver, at least you've initially opened a ticket prior to the demise of the warranty. Therefore, if it goes over that date, you'll still be covered.
Oh, I like that, Cal.
Yeah. Mike, good luck to you on that. Please keep us in the loop of what's happened, okay?
Thank you.
Yeah, get back to us at InternetAdvisor.net. Let us know how things have gone. Hey, we'll be back in just a moment at 800-859-0957, hopefully to help you direct you in getting your problems fixed. Harold and Joe will be talking with you in just a moment, and to you when you call us at 800-859-0957. Thank you so much for being here. I want to salute the people behind the glass who helped Mike Stett. Thank you very much for engineering. Been a marathon for him with us. It's been very good. Rich, thank you so much. Mr. Zensky, back in the back there, the master. And Andy Nichols, thank you so much for answering phones. It's been great to have you. And good to have you guys in studio with me, too, Cal, Ed, and Gary. And let's get back to answering the questions. Folks have been calling in here. Harold from Madison Heights, welcome to the Internet Advisor. And how can we help you this afternoon?
Yeah. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I have a question about Internet Explorer, but I also have a point of information probably a lot of the listeners don't know about.
Okay.
And that is Comcast in 6 to 9 months will no longer be serving the Great Lakes area.
It's no longer Comcast will be doing it because if they get the deal they want, it'll be, I think, Charter? It will take over their accounts?
They are looking for various...
Great Lakes Cable.
Great Lakes Cable.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, it depends on the area, and it may be Great Lakes Cable doing all of Michigan, but as of 2 months ago, 3 months ago, it was Charter, so there were a lot of rumors.
That's what I heard.
Going around, and I think what they're doing is they're in for different regions. They're looking for different ISPs to manage their people. What's unclear, and maybe you've heard this, is are the Comcast customers going to be able to retain their email addresses? I'm suspecting yes, but you know, I mean, I would hope that would just be good customer relations.
Yeah.
I know Madison Heights will be getting Great Lakes Cable.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, we're going to have to follow that a little more closely. This is because. Comcast is trying to take over huge. They want to merge with
Time Warner.
Time Warner.
They want
and if they get that,
if they get that, then the only way that can go ahead is that they have to give up.
Yes, they have to give up some clients, and it's kind of swapping. That's about basically it. Okay, now what was your question, Harold? After that,
okay. Good point of my question is: how dependable is Internet Explorer 11?
What is your operating system?
7.
And what kind of a machine are you on?
I have both a desktop and a laptop.
Are these older, newer?
They'll be 3 years old in December. The laptop will be, but the desktop is just under that.
You got a combined shrug from both of our guys.
Yeah, well, it depends. How much memory do you have on those devices? RAM.
My laptop is 3 gig. And my desktop is 2 gig.
The 2 gig one, I would definitely increase the RAM on there. It'll never ever hurt you to have more RAM, and that'll also make it easier for you to be able to do multiple things at the same time. The operating system will be a little more relaxed, and therefore, I think your internet experience would be a little more snappy if you had more memory.
Right. And it's probably the cheapest fix you can do right now.
And I have not updated to Internet Explorer 11. On my Windows 7 laptops. I'm still running 9. I'm not getting any notices from Microsoft telling me that, or any websites that the browser I'm using is not supported. I'm still using 9 on there.
Yeah, so, Harold, why would you want to move up to that?
Well, I just
well, it's available.
That was out there, and I've been running 10.
Well, I've been running...
No problems with it.
Okay. Oh, you've been having problems with it?
No.
Oh, you haven't? Okay, okay.
I've been running 11 for about 2 weeks on a Windows 7 machine. No, I take it back. I've been running on a Vista machine. And while it's not as snappy as I would like it to be, because that machine only has 3 gig on it, and it's an older machine, it's not a horrifying experience. Did I really need to go to 11? No, not really.
But there's no harm done, but it sounds like the agreement here is that if you have more RAM on the machine, it will generally be a much better experience, period.
Right. I
want to take my laptop up to 4 gig, which is the max for that.
Okay,
good. I don't know about the desktop.
Yeah, go ahead and elevate your laptop up to that level. Like Ed said, RAM is cheap now. It's not a big deal to do it.
Right.
And, it's going to make the whole overall machine run better anyway.
You'll enjoy it. Much more enjoyable experience. Okay, Harold, thank you very much for your question.
Yep, thanks a lot.
All right, take care.
You know, I'm sorry. I just keep on getting distracted by all the chocolate in the studio that's leftover Halloween candy.
Oh, my. You're going to need that extra hour of sleep.
Sugar all right. Buzz.
We have Harry from Port Huron with us. Harry, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How are you doing?
Welcome. Real good, guys. You want to pass some of that chocolate this through the phone line if you can? Anyway, I am going to be switching my internet over to kind of more being more mobile than instead of being here at home.
Yes, gotcha.
And I'm wondering, what do you guys, any of you do that full time? And if you do, what do you use?
Ed, this might be an interesting one matter of fact, right now in the studio, we're working off of your MiFi.
Well, that's correct. So I'm using a laptop, and Cal's using a MacBook Air, and the laptop I have, and I've purchased my children laptops, and I was able to get my son's off Amazon for $350,
okay.
And it's a great laptop, touchscreen, and I had to go, but when I did it, I had to get trifocals, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
but it's worth it, you know. And I really like it, that lightweight. That carrying around that desktop with that, I put a suitcase handle on it. It was just getting too heavy.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, but well, he was also wondering about how we move around with our internet per se.
Yeah.
And that's using a MiFi. Now, there's two choices you can go with that. You can go with a MiFi from like Verizon or any other companies out there. And I think the actual device itself is probably about as much as a cell phone, maybe about $200.
Well, no, I thought it was $50.
$200 or $300.
Yeah. Well, and if you get them on special, it's $50 and $50 a month. Instead of buying them, it depends what they're saying. But most cell phone plans include the ability for tethering.
Yes, now that's a good point.
Or personal area networking.
I just found that out with AT&T.
That's a choice, too.
So do you know what it means when we say tethering, Harry?
Yeah, you hook it up to the laptop from your cell.
That's exactly it.
And a lot of times you don't even have to hook it up. It establishes a Bluetooth connection or a personal area network.
And I thought, as a matter of fact,
wirelessly.
That with my AT&T plan that I would have to do something special, and the saleswoman that I was talking to said no, just, you know, turn it on.
Yeah.
You have to go into your phone settings.
It's a MiFi setup inside your phone itself. Now, for $28,000 plus, Chevy will sell you a MiFi built into a car, and you can drive that around, too. But it's a little more aggressively priced.
Here's what I'm thinking of doing, guys. Let me know what you think. I'm going to be... I talked to Verizon. It's the only thing that works in my building. I tried them all, and none of them work except that.
That's a very good way to test it out, by the way.
Yep, and they said, well, you can get a Jetpack, which is what you're taught, the Wi-Fi, for $50 a month, you get 5 gig. Well, I do a lot of streaming for what I do, and I could do that, and then I'm going to need a cell. They said, well, on top of that, you can get a cell, you know, an iPhone, and you can use your iPhone with the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But you're also going to need another phone line so you can make phone calls.
What?
Well, the other question is, okay, so when you say travel, do you mean travel within the house or travel anywhere?
Anywhere.
Okay.
You might want to look into what other plans they have for data.
Yeah.
Because at 5 gig and the way that you say that you're going to want to stream, here's the two things you're going to want to do. Number one, you're going to want to identify as many Wi-Fi hotspots that are publicly available in areas where you're going.
Right.
Because whenever you go there, you're going to want to use that for your streaming service.
Right, like when you're at home, you're going to have a wireless router, and the devices are going to be configured primarily to connect to the wireless, primarily the Wi-Fi, and secondary to the Jetpack or something, or your mobile phone.
Guys, let's stop for a second here, because it sounds like nowadays that the phones are good enough that I don't really need a Jetpack. That I can use my phone as the hotspot. Am I right on this?
I'm not giving you my Jetpack, just because you said that.
As long as you have the type of service where you can also do calls while you're doing data.
Because see, that's
some
the problem.
Of them you can, some of them you can't.
Oh.
That's the problem. I called them today, and I said, well, what if I use, you know, a Google Hangouts or used one of those?
Yeah.
Because my friend said, well, why don't you try that? Well, I called them. Well, that counts as data. Your phones count as data.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so it's a fine line when you get to that point. You have to decide, you know, can I live with this set number of streaming gigs per month, or am I better off? Well, I'm not ready to do that mobile thing right now. So you're going to have to shop around, and if you're stuck where you have to use one particular vendor, then you may not be ready for
now. What you might try to do, by the way, and I did this with AT&T recently, I said, take a look the last 4 months. Tell me how much I used. And that gave me an idea that I needed around 3 gigabytes, and that would be comfortable. Ed?
Now, one thing that's coming down the pipe, and we had a couple callers call in, actually from Dallas. And what Comcast is doing in the Texas area for the Dallas customers is they're actually updating all of their wireless modems to DOCSIS 3 compatible.
Which is
what they're trying to do here too. And what they're doing is that if you're a Comcast customer and you're in a metropolitan area where there's a lot of Comcast customers and you power up your notebook, your notebook runs a piece of software that basically says, I'm going to connect to wirelesses at, you know, anyone's house or any business that runs Comcast. You can stream through them free.
Wow, that'd be wonderful.
And they're introducing that throughout the country.
But that's still a little ways away. So, do a little more research on that. And it's... Don't necessarily get hooked into the Jetpack right off the bat, but do a little more homework on that. Hey, we have to take off, but thank you very much for the question. A good one. Back in just a moment, we'll talk to Bob. I want to thank our guys in studio here, Cal Carson, Ed Riddell, and Gary Baker, for being here answering questions. Guys, so good to have you and to have this kind of a unique opportunity. But next week, by the way, I think we'll also have this opportunity to take some calls live here. It's kind of a little break for us in the schedule with the sports.
But we'll be on 3 to 5, I think.
3 to 5 next week. And so you'll be able to call your questions in again between 4 and 5. Anyway, watch the website, internetadvisor.net, for more information on that. One more thing, just kind of a piece of business, because I've gotten emails on this. People are saying, what's going on with the Internet Advisor podcast feed on iTunes? Ist kaputt, as they say in German.
Hey, Foster, yeah, what's going on with the iTunes feed?
Yeah, if we knew, we'd fix it.
We have tried, and so what's going to happen, and Vince, who was in here before from VC Web Design, mm-hmm. helps us with the back end. One of his folks is going to help us. They're going to scrub the account completely.
Yep.
So it's going to mean they're going to unplug whatever's there now and is producing the garbage. We're going to hopefully tune it back up so that you can be able to get our podcast.
You know,
in any case, all you have to do is go to internetadvisor.net, and under podcasts, you will always be able to either download or stream the program there.
I don't think iTunes likes us, because Eric Anderson, our former producer, 4 years ago, had to do the same thing. He'd be pulling his hairs out.
I know.
He had two, and he would... And he'd say, I have to go out there and delete it and recreate it. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's exactly it. I don't know why it has happened, but what's happened now since iOS 8, the new, apparently what's happened is podcasts are now part of, they're hardwired in. You can't delete it. They're hardwired into the software package, and people are using iTunes then, the podcast application that's part of iOS 8. And so we're getting more and more calls and saying, what's going on? And folks, we're sorry, but we're going to try to remedy that and hopefully... but again, simply go to internetadvisor.net and you'll be able to find us there all the times. On Sunday nights, we post the podcast there. Okay, let's go to Livonia. And Bill, welcome to the show. Bill, how can we help you?
I've been getting these ads, pop-ups, ClearThink ads. Do you ever hear of them?
Which ads, please?
ClearThink.
ClearThink. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I can't figure any way of getting rid of them.
Yeah, they're a bugger to get rid of. How long has it been going on?
Probably a month or so. I only get it in Internet Explorer. I don't really get it in Firefox.
Oh, interesting. So it
hasn't infected. The add-on has not been added for Firefox.
Yeah.
So it only installed... for Internet Explorer.
So, guys, first of all, we have to say, folks, this is happening all over the place with people. You haven't done anything necessarily wrong. You've just gone to an infected website, and bam, it happens. It's a toolbar hijacker. And essentially what it does is anytime you try to do something on it, it takes you where it wants to go, not where you want to go.
Now, what version of Windows were you running?
7.
7?
Oh, 11. 11.
Well, you're running Windows 7.
Oh, no, Windows 7.
Yeah, but Internet Explorer 11 is the Internet 11, Explorer. Yeah.
Right. And Foster and I think both of us had to deal with this. And how I ended up removing it, if you go into the control panel under Programs and Features, you will find that you'll see a listing for ClearThink in there that you can uninstall.
Mm-hmm. I've done that.
That's step one. Okay, the other one is going into Internet Explorer and going into the Manage Add-ons under Tools,
right.
Manage Add-ons, and disabling the add-on for it. You're having a difficulty with Internet Explorer. I had a user that I was dealing with that had Firefox, and it was really difficult to get out of that one. So look for the add-on as well. And have you tried downloading and installing Malwarebytes?
Yes, I got it. I tried Malwarebytes. I tried CCleaner. I tried Norton 360. Nothing.
Yep. And I ran into the same thing where it removed some of it.
Yeah.
But every time I opened up a new tab, there it was.
Boom. Yep.
And there was a... I'm trying to remember how I actually eliminated
it. Well, you said it was not in Firefox, right?
Not usually. Sometimes it comes up, but not very often.
All right. Question, guys. Is it possible for him to uninstall Internet Explorer and, let's say, go back to Internet Explorer 10?
That is a good idea, I'm glad you brought that up. One of the benefits of the Internet Explorer is because it was installed with Internet Explorer, I think, 9 with Windows 7, is that you can
go into Programs and Features, uninstall Internet Explorer, the current version, and then magically the previous version will still be there. And then you can re-update again to Internet Explorer 9. So you'll go from, I'm sorry, he said he's at Internet Explorer 11.
Yeah, 11.
You'll go down to 10, and then that should take care of the problem. And then you can go back to 11 again. The other thing, I we had a guest on here a month ago, and he was talking about ADW Cleaner.
Oh, yes.
And for adware, like an adware cleaner. And that, while talking and reading, which is very difficult, that apparently might be able to remove it as well. And I ran the utility as well, and that was able to remove a few more items. I'll try to put a link to that on the Internet Advisor's website under the toolkit for adware removers.
Okay.
But it's ADW Cleaner for like an adware remover.
Okay.
I like Foster's idea.
Yeah, the idea would be to uninstall Internet Explorer 11, and then it will prompt you to install. It should prompt you to install Internet Explorer 10, and that should then, as Ed says, once that's installed and you see that it's clean, it's working properly, then you can upgrade to Internet Explorer 11.
Yeah, and the other thing is, while we prepare for the next caller, is. I sometimes go to malwaretips.com and I search for the exact, adware program that's bugging me. So malwaretips.com is one of those resources that, well, if you Google it, it'll take you there quite frequently. Right. Google will take you to
malwaretips. Malwaretips.com is the site to go to. Okay.
Is that pretty much what you found out?
Yeah, pretty much. And then I also found a really nice YouTube video that showed you how to remove that from both Google and Firefox and Internet Explorer, and as Ed said, also from ad remove programs. And you have to do it from every, you have to check all your browsers
to make sure
they're all clear.
Unfortunately, because the darn things are like fleas.
Oh, yeah.
And this one's particularly hard to get rid of. It reminds me of, Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware and some of these other utilities we use have been so good recently that we have to go back to the, what we had to do 3 or 5 years ago to really root some of these new ones that are coming up because they really entrench themselves.
Really annoying. Okay, let's see if we can get one more call in here. And this is Basim, I think, from Troy. Welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, how you doing? What can we help you with?
I'm trying to choose a smartphone, and I've read a lot about the different complexities of the iPhone versus the Android system-wise, how it functions. What do I expect from it over time?
Have you worked with either one of those systems at all before?
No.
What do you have a smartphone right now?
No,
I have
a stupid phone.
Wait a minute. Some people who have smartphones call them stupid phones as well. what I would suggest you do, and guys, what you think, would be to go to like AT&T or Verizon or Best Buy. Best Buy is a good place to go. Mm-hmm. Get your hands on the different kinds of phones and just try working around them and see what works well with your eyes. I can tell you a little story. My wife, we just needed a new phone for her. She went into the AT&T store, and what she did was she went around from keyboard from phone to phone till she found the computer keyboard that she made the least amount of mistakes on. And that was how, and so she walked
away. For typing.
So she walked away with the Lumia 1520, which is huge. It's a 6-inch phone. My daughters are giving her all sorts of grief, but it works perfectly for her because she's on Windows 8 at home. So my suggestion is get into one of those stores and get your hands on it, Basim.
Yeah.
And that'll help you to make your decision a little bit better, okay?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Wish we could take a little more time with that. And for the folks who we didn't get a chance to talk with yet, Joe and Karen, hang on there. We'll talk with you a little bit after the show. But otherwise, folks, you can get hold of us 24/7 by writing to internetadvisor.net and then going to the Contact Us button.
And they can also call us next week between...
Oh, that's right, between 4 and 5. We will be here on the air. Am I right, Gary? I got them right? Yeah, 3
that's
to 5.
We have a 3 to 5 show, guests the first hour, and our most important guest, you, the callers, and our listeners, the second
hour, which is 4 to 5. So join us next week for that. The rest of you out there, don't forget, those of you who are listening to us on November the 1st, fall back and get a little more sleep tonight. It's your reward for having sprung forward before. Have a great weekend. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisors Show, the longest-running, locally produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.